significance that shone from them almost like illumination. He contemplated the bands, thinking that if he had known better, maybe he would not have sent the Ring of Desire off to Earth. Back then, he'd had two rings, War and Desire, and he'd known where to find Commerce. Maybe he could have tracked down Death on his own, giving him the four needed to open the way. He could have used them as the key. No, probably not. Before Ardeen had been pulled from the Schrodinger-like null space, where it nestled in the strange, out of sync from Earth, his own Ring of War, not to mention the Ring of Commerce and the Ring of Desire, had possessed only a ghost of their previous power, too little to have opened the hall, his research had proven. Besides, he hadn't known for sure where to look for the Ring of Death. Stealing it had been a happy accident. As he'd planned in sending the Ring of Desire across laden with spells come malware, Earth and Ardeen had reconnected. He'd been thrilled to learn that 200 years hadn't passed on Earth, as it had here, but only 3. The reconnection brought Carter back, which Jason hadn't expected. Carter's renewed existence in turn rejuvenated the rings to their current potential, which, while not yet full, were surely at least half their original strength. Strength enough to open the hall. Starting with getting his revenge on the man who'd trapped him here for 200 years, but this time he wouldn't kill Carter. No, he'd learned his lesson. He needed Carter alive to keep the rings revitalized. Carter obviously didn't have all the Maker's power himself yet, or he'd have gone into the hall, which is why he'd called the rings. Jason wasn't exactly sure how it would all go down. It was all a tangled mess. But Jason was committed to surfing that chaos and coming out on top. Of course, if he managed to enter the hall and claim the Maker's mantle, Carter would be superfluous. Worse, the threat. As the Dlama flew, Jason imagined different ways he might end Carter's existence permanently, or at least painfully. Ardeen's edges were ragged, half-dead, and partly crumbled into drifting earth motes, called skerries. As the Dlama winged out into the void towards the superficies, the discomfort in his stomach that had plagued him as they'd left the strange sharpened. Jason remembered the Kray who'd pursued him out of their domain. What if the Kray are waiting? I am fast, the Dlama replied. You better be. They passed into the strange. As before, the roiling infinities stretched Jason's mind to breaking point. Closing his eyes offered scant comfort. Somehow the medium was able to press through his eyelids and impart their immensities directly into his consciousness. The Dlama swerved sharply, almost throwing him. Only the leather restraints kept him in the saddle. Jason's eyes snapped open instinctively. The Kray Armada was all around them. A carapaced swarm of thousands falling through the strange with pincers extended like fighter plane guns. The Dlama swerved again to avoid a flight of 5 Kray no bigger than dogs, then dove like a stone to get beneath a Kray as large as a house. The monsters had obviously not ceased their advance after he'd escaped their pursuit by entering Ardeen. Had they known he'd emerge again? "Get us out of here!" he screamed to the Dlama. The winged beast was already juking and corkscrewing like a Rebel Alliance ship dodging TIE fighters. His command was only more noise amid a rising scream of hunting Kray. The pain in his belly was worse than ever. He pushed it away. The leather straps, keeping him in the saddle, jerked savagely each time the Dlama made a course correction, adding to his discomfort. How had the Kray known to wait for him, when he himself hadn't known he'd returned to the strange more than a few hours ago? A Kray pincer clipped the Dlama. He and the Dlama tumbled, though neither uttered a shriek. Jason prepared to call for the Mantle of War, but his mount, pulled out of the fall, which perhaps not coincidentally put them at least 100 meters from the closest tray. They flashed through a region of thin blue fractals stretching away like curling puppet strings. Beyond the cray outriders that had ambushed them, a far larger cray mass boiled and surged like a flying anthill above them. A nebula of darkness swirled at its core, and from that darkness, Jason sensed an all-consuming malevolence. Even if Ardeen wasn't really real, the planetivore that commanded the Kray in that advancing apocalypse was every bit as authentic and palpable as Jason himself. Not for the first time he regretted he'd ever had dealings with the damn things. Those bargains had literally lessened him. The Dlama took advantage of the clear space around it and looped back in a wide curve towards the interface with Ardeen. A flight of Kray tried to get in between them and the superfices. Jason batted them away with his staff using war's strength, splattering both himself and his mount with gore, and the Dlama zipped through the opening. With a familiar psychic squeeze, they passed back into Ardeen. Relief made him gasp. He half expected to see Mageddon on the horizon, but as the Dlama had promised, beyond the borderlands was only a sere flatland of polished glass, the glass desert. He glanced behind them, back the way they'd come. The barest hints of the strange were visible beyond the tumbling earth motes. But the boundary would keep out their pursuers. Kray always tried to find a way in, but the seven rules inevitably kept them fenced out. "You have my thanks," Jason told the Dlama as it returned to its earlier, slower pace. Sweat slicked its back and heat came off it like a furnace. Any lesser effort would have seen them fall into the Kray's clutches. They flew on into the desert along the route Jason pointed out based on his intuitive sense of where Carter had called from. Hours later, the ache in his stomach was back. "By the Maker," Jason muttered, rubbing. It was worse than ever. Was he going to be sick? The sensation grew until it burned in his belly like someone holding a torch to his skin. He hissed at the uptick in agony and bent to visually check if he'd taken a wound he'd failed to notice. Lifting the stiff leather of his armor, he saw not the least blemish. How? Then he realized the sensation wasn't actually coming from his stomach. It was referred pain. The actual injury was somewhere else. The burning escalated like acid bubbling inside him, as if one of his organs had split open and spilled its contents into his veins and arteries. He felt something shatter and nearly fell from the saddle. Darkness stabbed across Jason's vision like reverse lightning, and he cried out. As did the Dlama. Its flight became erratic. It screamed, "What have you done, betrayer? Why does the sky darken and crack in our wake? The interface between Ardeen and the strange is failing, and I feel the walls of the world shaking." "What walls?" "The walls. The seven rules that keep out strangers, you fool," screamed the Dlama. "Oh, no," whispered Jason, as a new agony spasmed through him. He understood. All his deals with the Kray over the years, all the pieces of himself he'd traded away for their aid. He hadn't only been trading on his own soul. How could he? He was also an incarnation of the Maker, a manifestation of one of the seven rules. Every promise he'd made, every lease on his independence he'd traded away for reality seeds, artifacts of the dark energy network he'd been too afraid to search out for himself within the strange, and favors large and small. All had been trades on Ardeen's sovereignty, too. When he'd finally seen the Kray, naked and unfiltered in the strange, they'd called all his promises due in their massed mental voice. He thought they'd wanted him then and there, but unlike what he'd told Merrid, if the Kray had eaten him out in the strange, unconnected with the realm of his birth, the Kray would have lost all the ground they'd gained by helping him and accepting their promises. If he'd been outside Ardeen, the land of curse would have remained barred to them upon his death. Those fucking monsters had played him. After declaring their covenant due, they'd let him get away. He'd done as they'd secretly desired, his relief blinding him to what they really wanted. The Kray wanted him to return to Ardeen. He'd been the final key in the lock. Jason gazed back at the sky from where they'd come. Bruised storm clouds swelled there, boiling in a way that reminded him of how the fundament of the strange moved. Lightning, dark as crow wings, stabbed and played beneath, and where it struck the ground, geysers of disintegrated stone and glass from the desert sprayed up. Reality was becoming liminal, fragile. "What can we do?" screamed the Dlama over a peal of basso thunder. "I can stop this. I am war, damn it. I'm an incarnation, by the Maker. I should be able to stop the Kray's advance." Jason didn't really believe his own words, but he didn't have to convince himself. He had to convince the shadow of war that haunted his soul to emerge once more and take charge. Or a new thought crystallized. It wasn't quite a plan. It was more of a desperate ploy. He pointed. "That way, Dlama. Carter waits. He'll help. He won't have a choice." Chapter 33, Reunion. Carter Strange. Pre-dawn light filtered in through tent fabric. For several delicious moments, I didn't know where I was other than in a tent, or remember how I'd gotten there. I relished the feeling for all of 4 seconds. "Carter, get out here." The voice belonged to Queen Elendine and came from somewhere outside the tent. My waking daze crumbled, and I remembered everything. Crap. It couldn't have been more than a few hours since I'd been offered a tent to get some rest. I rose, slipped on my boots and outer robe, grabbed my magic sphere, and followed Saraja outside. The sun was still below the horizon, which meant it wasn't scorching hot, but the light was increasing fast. The tent was set in the lee of a wall of glass shards that ran away west. The shards had apparently formed when one massive segment of the desert ground into another segment, throwing up a sharp rampart. The queen's protector, Navar, had picked the spot last evening because of its defensive posture. The soul sorcerers hadn't come boiling out of their crater to track me down yet, so we hadn't had to test whether the blade's sharp splinters truly offered a formidable barrier. A storm was rolling up from the south, its reflection in the glass doubling its already prodigious size. It was wrong somehow, but my attention was dragged to a closer disturbance. A detachment of the Queen's guards clustered around something on the glass, blocking my view. Shoving through the press, Saraja at my heels, I saw what had so ruffled the peacekeepers, 2 strangers. One was a noble-winged Dlama, its human-like face hidden in a ritual mask. I sensed the mask also served as its name, which translated to something like Far Voyager. The other stranger dismounted the Dlama as I approached. He was a large man, wearing armor forged in black iron. His helm sported impressively proportioned backward-swept spikes. He wielded something that might have been a mace, a staff, or a spear, or all 3 at once that flickered redly at one end. "Jason," I said, knowing him despite his extravagant costume. Just as I'd known him on Earth when Jason the Psycho had possessed Kate Manor's friend Raoul, Jason Cole stood before me. But his name echoed with the sound of swords clashing and the smell of blood spilling. He was also war. "Carter Strange!" yelled Jason, doffing his helm. Revealed was the face I'd recognized from our years together, when we'd been colleagues, if not friends. Dark lines etched his brown eyes. His hair was too long, and the barest hint of a sneer twitched on his lips. How I hated that face! I raised Jusher defensively. Of its own volition, it took flight and hovered near my head. Around me, the Queen's troops also brought up their crossbows, all fixed on Jason. The surrounding guards stepped aside, admitting Elendine and Navarre. The Queen immediately drew her blade. Saraja just looked at me, a question plain on her face. She wanted to know what my play was going to be. I wish I knew. I opened my mouth to say something anyway, hoping the mere act would pull something useful out. The Queen beat me to the punch. Spitting each word like a trebuchet bullet, she addressed Jason. "You have something of mine, War. Give it back. Even you can't defeat me and my army, not when the Maker stands with us." Her eyes flicked to me when she said Maker. I was glad it was still too dark for anyone to see my cheeks flush. "Your Majesty," said Jason, "believe me when I tell you how sorry I am that I lied. You stole the Ring of Peace after you promised to save my sister." She took a step closer but restrained herself from hewing Jason or commanding her troops to attack. I worried she wouldn't wait much longer, though. Jason coughed, then responded. "Despite all that, I believe we can come to an accord." He licked his lips, smiled a sad smile. "As it happens, I need Carter's help with something. It's rather urgent. Have any of the other rings come to you yet, Carter, since you made your call?" His eyes darted hopefully around the camp, as if he was looking for a stray incarnation loitering behind the mess tent. "So you can make off with those too, you thief?" Elendine yelled. Anger stretched her voice tight. Surprising that Jason hadn't attacked us outright. A good sign? On the other hand, Elendine was moments from violence. "What do you mean you need my help?" I said. "Last time we talked, back on Earth, weren't you gloating that you finally had your revenge? Didn't you laugh when you saw I'd been shot?" Jason rubbed the bridge of his nose, sighing. "Look, it's all true. I admit everything. I'm an evil prick, but it doesn't matter." "Doesn't matter?" I yelled, momentarily forgetting I'd been the one who was trying to calm the situation and figure out what War wanted before Elendine tried to cut his liver out. "Nope," Jason said. "All that is bygones. Don't know if you've noticed, old buddy, but the 7 rules of Ardeen have been breached." Jason gestured at the wonky storm still piling higher on the southern horizon. "In about 10 minutes, we're all going to be ass-deep in Cray." My eyes found the storm again. I focused on the black thunderheads that visibly swelled as each second passed. The wrongness I'd sensed before remained. In fact, oh no, I breathed when I saw what lay behind the clouds. The storm was an atmospheric reaction to an incursion. It was a Kray invasion of Ardeen, with every monster precipitating cloud formation by its unwelcome presence. Kray swirled in that storm, thousands strong. I could sense something like exultance mixed with unending hunger. But they were only the vanguard for the thing that followed after them, easing itself a little at a time through the crack in the bulwark of Ardeen I'd thrown up 3 years earlier to protect Earth. I tried to name it, understand it, but failed so completely that the feedback of my defeat sparked a blinding headache. I grunted and grabbed my head, squeezing my eyes shut, but unable to keep the memory of what I'd seen crawling behind my eyes. "Are you all right, Carter?" I heard Saraja ask through a migraine-like aura. Was I? The initial pain spike was already subsiding, replaced by a burning anger at what I suspected must have happened. Anger was easier to bear than uncertainty, than fear. Fury damps out other internal voices. It's a form of certainty, and it seemed certain that Jason had killed Earth. We can still fix this, he said. We can't... You think I'm stupid enough to trust you? I snapped as my vision cleared. I focused only on him. For all I know, you're the one who caused this. In fact, given how you were fucking around uploading quantum computer manufacturing instructions to idiots on Earth, I'm sure of it. No, he said, but he sounded like a liar to my special sense. I didn't believe him. On the other hand, why wasn't he arriving with these invaders as they poured into Ardeen? Seemed exactly like the sick thrill ride war, and maybe even Jason would get off on. Then the truth, a black rose blooming, sprouted, and it disgusted me. I know what happened. You tried to deal with the Kraid, didn't you? They gave you something that gave you access to Earth. But then they double-crossed you, too. Betrayed the betrayer. Jason said, I didn't, you did. Except you didn't know they take everything on offer and then some. They're here to eat Ardeen and you, isn't that right? To consume it all, and then rush up the renewed link you forged with Earth and take that, too. I didn't know, Jason said, almost pleading. I shook my head in contempt. You asshole. I made you an incarnation. I gave you everything you could have dreamed of here in Ardeen, and in return you... Jason interrupted, his voice suddenly loud and hot and no longer defensive. No! Screw that, Carter. You gave me nothing. You trapped me here in this fucking dream world, this nightmare that would never end, and told me how happy I should be. You caged me in a make-believe place filled with shadows of actual people and told me it was better than real life. You locked me, Sanders, Alice, and Melissa in here, like we were animals in a zoo, explaining that it was okay because the cage looked so realistic. Well, we knew, you bastard. We knew. It's a fucking fake. You're the asshole, Carter. You betrayed all of us first. The storm swelled. Even as true dawn gathered beneath the horizon, the portion of the glass desert beneath the Kray Armada remained dark. In their approaching shadow, I couldn't sustain my own anger at Jason. For the first time, I had an inkling of what had driven my old friend to such crazy lengths. If he didn't view Ardeen and the advantages I'd given him and the others as real and meaningful, then of course it must have felt like a trap. Arguments I could have used to convince Jason that this place was every bit as real as Earth, that he had it all wrong, on and on, gathered behind my lips and stayed there. The Kray were minutes away. Besides, Jason was 200 years from his perspective down the road of convincing himself on his worldview, one where I had betrayed him. Rushed observations and arguments by me were not going to make him suddenly realize he was looking at everything wrong, that everyone he'd hurt or killed to get where he was had been real enough to feel the pain and death and, oh, gee, can't we all just be friends now? He was still a killer, even if he didn't want to admit it to himself. But, killer or not, didn't he have at least something approaching a point? Had our positions been reversed and Jason locked me in some place I regarded as a facade of reality, who's to say I wouldn't have reacted the same? So instead I sighed and said, Jason, I apologize. I disagree, and I think your tactics are shit, but I can see things from your shoes. Being trapped someplace you don't want to be sucks. You didn't deserve it. and didn't ask to spend 2 centuries here. I'm sorry. Damn straight, he yelled. Then he blinked as if confused, apparently not quite sure where to go next. My capitulation had lanced some of his rancor and knocked him off balance. So, explain more about what you said earlier, I said. About needing my help, do you have a plan to turn back the Kray? Jason fumed a second longer, glanced at the storm, then reluctantly nodded. He'd come this far. I could almost sense him thinking, and he'd be damned if he was going to give up now. I do have a plan, he said. He seemed suddenly, if it was possible, afraid. As if he feared what the Kray might do to him personally. Served the psycho right. He pulled something that clinked from a pouch on his belt, displaying it on his palm. 2 rings lay there, threaded on a leather thong, and a third gleamed from his index finger. Not rings, rings, I gasped. 3 rings, Carter. We have 3, unless one of the other incarnations... I shook my head no. He continued, had I known the Kray were breaking through the interface, I'd have tried to extract a 4th ring that's residing in my fortress. Sadly, no time remains for us to retrieve it. I'm hoping we don't need it. With you, the sorry excuse of what remains of the Maker, there's a chance we can open up the Maker's hall and fix everything. We've got 3 rings, plus whatever Maker you can manifest. We can reseal the borderlands, eject the Kray. I concentrated on the rings and knew them instantly. Jason wore the Ring of War. On his palm was the Ring of Commerce and the Ring of Death. Ellendine had moved closer during Jason's recital of my crimes against him. Now she said in a voice devoid of all emotion, "Hand over my ring." I think she was as surprised as me when he untied the cord and passed her one of the heavy bands. The Queen couldn't quite bring herself to thank Jason for returning what he'd taken from her, so she just looked at me instead. Is there any truth in what the betrayer says? Are we all about to die? If we can't stop the Kray, yes, everyone in our dean. And you can use my ring and the 2 he has to open the hall? Maybe. And doing so will save us? Only if we're insanely lucky, I admitted. Sad truth was, I didn't know the answer to any of the Queen's questions. If Jason was wrong, there was a good chance we were about to die out on the glass. I addressed the hovering sphere. Jusher, can we open the Maker's Hall with only 3 rings and myself? You can try. I cannot predict the future. Not even the Maker could. We need a little more assurance than that, I complained. I have none to give, Jusher said. Well, I said, unless someone else has a better plan, I say we try it. Better let me hold Commerce. Jason handed it over. It was even heavier than I'd expected. None of the friends I'd accidentally trapped in Ardeen had been interested in being the incarnation of Commerce, yet that incarnation had also walked the land of the curse, too. Commerce hadn't possessed the spark of consciousness allowing it to realize its true nature. It believed it was a demigod of Ardeen and nothing else, unlike the rings who I'd given human hosts, or me when I'd made myself Maker. Should I put it on, Ellendine said, or just hold it? I spent a second studying her and the ring. From it I sensed a cold wind, a whiff of rotting flesh, and a sound like a stone sarcophagus lid slamming. Jason's wearing the Ring of War. You might as well wear the Ring of Death. Doing so might strengthen your connection and improve our chances to open the way. Jason made as if to protest. What? I asked. He turned to Ellendine. With Carter's revival, a measure of each ring's potency has returned, as you know. Try not to let the office of death overwhelm you. Her agenda might not be yours. Ellendine just stared at him, then slipped on the ring. It's cold, she said. Then she added, her voice deeper and more resonant, but cold is death's realm, and I am returned. Okay, I said, glancing at Jason. He hadn't been kidding. Try to keep it together, Ellendine. Join hands, everyone. So saying, I slipped on the ring of commerce. The Queen and Jason didn't want to hold hands. I remained with my hands out until they, War and Death, acquiesced. War was on my left. His hand gripped mine in an overly aggressive clinch that actually hurt. On my right, Ellendine. Her clasp was as light and cold as a dusting of snow over a tombstone. I sensed the resting aura of commerce, not conscious, but not quite absent either, as a dizzying flurry of numbers carved on tablets, bales of silk, and the feel of hard coin. I sensed that I could inflate that aura around me, if only briefly, and glory in the truth of sums. But that wasn't my path, nor would it provide us the answer we sought. For the Maker, there was no ring that served as a badge of office, no ring of creation. Had it been so, this would have been so much easier. Of course Jason would have found and stolen something like that a long time ago. The office of the Maker was conviction. It was an unshakable trust of knowing yourself as the architect of our deen, first in words, then in lines of code, and finally, in an act of wanton desperation when I'd impressed it on the dark energy network. I squeezed my eyes shut. My teeth creaked as I ground them together. The hands I clasped in mine were solid evidence of my creation, as was the glass below my boots and the very air I breathed. It may have been simulated by the dark energy network, but it was simulated as well as reality itself was simulated by atoms of normal matter. For all that, conviction eluded me. Certitude had always been hard for me. I was more of a doubter, especially of my own capabilities. Usually I pulled off a little magic trick by flipping my usual uncertainty into a humorous shield, finding something to laugh about in almost any situation, especially if I could point out how I'd screwed something up. Jokes were my defense for my failure of confidence. They were faux conviction. Ha, ha! Except now that it had come to it. Nothing was funny about my inability to grasp the Maker's power. The version of me who'd done it must have lucked into it. I wasn't up to the task. If anything, the more I chased it, whatever it was, the further. Why do you try to kill the seed of the Maker within you? Intoned the Queen, her voice echoing as if from a mausoleum. I opened my eyes and glanced at her. Ellendine was there, but also stood there was Death. Instead of armor, Ellendine wore shadow. She retained Renswandir at her belt, but in her possession I knew it for an implement whose merest touch would slay any living thing. I shuddered. War added, his voice far more than Jason's, "If you cannot defeat your own doubts, you do not deserve to be the Maker. All we have left is to fight and die on this final field of battle." War's grip loosened as he prepared to disengage from our circle. "Stop," I told War. In that moment, as I instructed the incarnation, a trickle of what the Maker had been came to me. I seized it before it could slip away, and willed that my home of old show itself. The sun burst over the horizon. The Maker's hall was revealed as a reflection in the surface of the glass desert. Plunging falls, colossal images of noble Kephlum, and beyond that, an astounding series of mounting, shining ramparts that seemed to go up forever. The image wavered in the very substance the rising ramparts had once been constructed of, before the final battle with Lotan's armies. The Maker's Hall, a stupefyingly immense glass castle, had been slagged and melted when Lotan burned hottest. Lotan had ultimately been defeated, but the glass castle slumped, becoming the glass desert. Though how any of that could literally be true, I hadn't the first clue. The Maker's assurance retreated like a wave after it breaks. I'd been touched by greatness, but only for a moment, but one lasting long enough to produce an image of the Maker's Hall, as I recall it from old, uttered War. A vision from the age of myth, agreed Death. It's just a reflection, I protested. How do we get in? They both looked at me like I'd pointed out a turd in the punch bowl. Well, I said. The reflection wavered at our feet. Access to what it represented was closed, and worse, not even really there. My naming sense reported that, in its current state, access to the hall lay beyond our ability. Death's visage dispersed, leaving Ellendine blinking into the glaring sun. We're out of time, she released my hand. Jason did the same, muttering, Nice knowing you, Carter. Actually, no, it pretty much sucked. The storm was a pale cloak being drawn across the empty plain towards us. It was maybe 30 seconds away. The Queen shouted to Navarre and her army. They raced to deploy into defensive positions behind the fence of glass shards where our camp lay. Flickers of Death's shadow followed in her wake. Jason turned to face the oncoming storm, lifting his helm to cover his head. He literally swelled in size, becoming more a creature than a man. It was his true guise as War, something that I vaguely remembered as if from a childhood dream. Around him, his army of lesser selves appeared in ones and twos, then fives and tens and more. Saraja had watched our failed attempt to enter the hall. I sensed her disappointment in the lay of her ears. This is insane, she said. We will all die. But she drew her blade and set herself to defend. The Dlama, called Far Voyager, flew away, moving swiftly in the opposite direction as the oncoming storm, fleeing the field. I couldn't say I blamed it. I faced our onrushing foe. The southern half of the glass desert was gone. It was hidden under a line of crawling mist, a thunderhead fallen from the sky. The rising sun's brilliance was dimmed to that of a hazy silver quarter over which shapes flitted like bats across the moon, except they weren't bats, they were cray. Then the storm engulfed us. My mouth went dry, and my hands shook as the mist washed over me, overwhelming me. Sharp sounds were muffled as fog made it hard to see farther than a few dozen yards. In that murk, the cray swarmed like wasps. They were alien terrors bent on destroying us. Before I knew it, I was on the ground, my head ringing from smacking into the glass. Had a cray knocked me over? No. My own feet had tripped me up when I panicked. The monsters wouldn't get me if I brained myself first. My arms were locked over my head, so I forced them down. Pressing them onto the cracked glass beneath me, I pushed myself back to my feet. I forced myself to draw a few calming breaths. Maybe all wasn't lost. The invading Kray were in Ardine. Though breached, my world still imposed rules. Though infected, Ardine still. A Kray's shape resolved from the haze and darted at me. You cocksucker, I screamed as it knocked me over. Before this moment, the thing had been nameless. Now it had one, even though accidentally bestowed. But in Ardine, names have power, if you know what you're doing. Rolling to avoid a pincer stab, panting and wheezing, I choked out a different name, one that conflated its new name to stone. Gray and lifeless as a statue, it dropped on the glass and smashed into three parts. Yes, I whispered, feeling almost jubilant. This wasn't beyond me. If I could keep my fear in check and make a plan. The haze thinned, allowing me to see much farther. Sword blades and arrow tips flickered as Elendine's army hewed and peppered the onrushing force. Seeing that they hadn't merely been erased by the mist, as some panicked part of my brain had apparently decided, made me stand taller. A score more invaders died the final death at their hands even as I watched. Lone soldiers, who'd broken from cover to keep Kray from overrunning the Queen's archers, spun and hacked with sharp blades. Sometimes a carapace was pierced, and the soldier moved on to another foe. Elendine strode back and forth along the line of archers. Her shadow deepened once more even as I watched, until she was a pillar of darkness. Death walked Ardine again, and I could feel her chill from here. Her implements scythed out, and in ones and twos, Kray, who'd managed to get past the skirmish line of blade wielders, crumbled like ash at its touch. As effective as death was, war was more awesome. He was a multitude, fielding nearly as many warriors as the soldiers in Elendine's army. They fought with more abandon, more ferocity, and with less concern for their own safety, and each time one died, another stepped from war's flesh, fresh to the fight, and a master in the arts of blade and battle. War himself was a bulwark. He lay about him with his flaming implement, smearing Kray into so much burning offal with each blow. Watching him, despite everything, filled me with elation. By chance or design, Siraja and I stood in the pocket created by war and death. When I saw a stray Kray slip through our defense, I named it Stone. I was amazed anew each time one smashed onto the glass, leaving a small crater of crazed cracks. Siraja muttered, "I can't believe we're still alive." "Stay with me," I said, "and we'll get through this." She spared me a doubtful, sidelong glance. "It's only luck we haven't already died," Siraja said. "Listen, did you see what I did back there? What the Queen and War are doing? We've... Look what comes for us now," she pointed. I looked. Dread edged my earlier confidence. Resolving from the fog, a mass of scrambling Kray charged across the glass, each twice as large as a man. The flitting, flying ones we'd been downing with so much success were annoying insects compared to the galloping, horse-sized crab spiders coming for us. Even larger ones, rumbling like tanks, were visible as dim shadows through the mist behind them. More uncertain yet, though too large to dismiss, the hint of something vast heaved closer, cutting through the mist like a supertanker cleaves ocean swells. A kaiju-sized monstrosity whose complete dimensions were cloaked in gray mist. An infrasonic boom, 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 vibrated up through the glass, matching the many-legged strides of the half-sensed thing. Each clap hammered at my courage. It was the central entity I'd failed to identify when I'd first tried to name the storm. My elation tumbled back towards fear. This was nothing less than our end. War's forces wavered and shrank, even as the incarnation's height diminished to more human proportions. A voice that was purely Jason's yelled, "It's the fucking matriarch! She's coming for me! I gotta get out of here!" Oh, fuck. I had no time to wonder what he meant by she. Jason's fear was toxic to his ability to manifest war. Without war, we stood no chance. Well, we stood even less of a chance than the zero chance we'd currently faced. I had no illusions. Our odds were grim, but fuck it. Jason was going to have to face up to his crime and fight on like the rest of us to the end. Then again, what if the Kray were literally here for Jason, at least as step one of their plan? If he died so far in their debt, one of the seven rules would more than simply teeter and bend, as had already happened. It would dissolve. That would release Lotan at the core. But before the cursed one could do more than blink, the Kray would crack Ardine like a virus bursting an infected cell. Rather than spewing Kray back out into the strange, they'd instead infect the connection between Earth and Ardine, pulling their planetivore matriarch behind them. War, I named Jason. You are an incarnation of Ardine. You are one of the seven. Fight, I command you in the Maker's name. Warmth bloomed in my chest as I spoke. I knew that I had again successfully triggered my ability. I just didn't know how. Jason receded, and War come once again to the fore. Perhaps more so than at any previous time. The armored man swelled to his former towering height, and then some. His army of multiples expanded outward from him like a ripple spreading outward from a stone dropped in water. A rush of Kray who'd moved to take advantage of the weakness Jason's doubt had created along the left flank was quickly overrun. War was back, and I knew he would fight until he could do so no longer. From the right, where Elendine's army was deployed, Death, in her shadowed call, gave me a nod of congratulations, almost like she might have given the real Maker. Impressive, said Siraja. Now open the doors to the Maker's Hall, because even an 11-foot-tall demigod and the incarnation of Death can't stand long against that. She pointed out into the mist at the monstrosity. She was right. I resolved to try again, using the time War's return had brought us. A Kray dropped from directly overhead, slamming into me and Siraja. The impact smashed me to the glass. Siraja spun away staggering but stayed on her feet. The Kray ignored her and lowered one massive claw to snip off my head. I tried to name it, but the stars behind my eyes and the lack of air in my lungs meant I was only able to gasp. The pirate stepped forward and plunged her sword into the Kray's side. Goo sprayed and the monster squealed. Then its many legs buckled, and I army-crawled from beneath it before it toppled to the glass. The Keflum pulled me up just in time to face four more who'd somehow got around War, Death, and their respective armies. Our foes' numbers had increased so much that even with Kray dead piling up like snow, there were still too many. Strands of webbing arced high through the air. Where strands fell among the soldiers, screams rang out. The webbing was like acid, in that it burned away the substance of Ardine. I growled a wordless curse, then named all the webbing I could see. It dispersed into a rain of white flowers that normally only grew along the mountaintops. The Kray responded by launching another volley. The fight descended into a free-for-all. There wasn't time to try to open a way into the hall again. If I didn't concentrate everything on staying alive, we would be dead in seconds. My nails bit into my palms as I clenched my hands into fists. Panic and fear would only get me killed now. I screamed as I lost myself in the frenzied, hazed battle to save the world. Chapter 34 Dissolution Elendine, Queen of Azurium. The Kray had no souls, at least they didn't before they entered Ardine. One of the ground rules for Land of the Curse demanded that any intelligent creature who perished there must leave behind a record of its mind and goals, its accomplishments and failures, its souls. Thus did Death reap the Kray, pulling their newly minted souls from their bodies like pits from an olive. If they'd been natives, she'd have sent them to be judged by her faithful kindred in the Court of Sleep. To her was given the power to expunge from any creature its spark. The Kray who'd come into Ardine had life, which Death gladly wiped away as she relinquished their confused, fledgling souls to nothingness. Even so, The part of death that remembered it was Ellen Dean marveled at herself. Never before had Renswandeer moved with such lethal fluidity. Flick, flick, stab, snap, 4 dead cray. Slash, touch, spin, 5 more dead cray. Everything was a blur, hypnotizing Ellen Dean and fueling death's vigor. Rarely had the incarnation unleashed her power in such a tide, not since the great battles during the Age of Myth, when humans had fought on the side of Lotan. Then she'd mowed the humans down with an implement even grander than this one, a scythe of magic and will that she wished was with her now. She'd been sleeping too long, though, to remember where she'd laid it down. Renswandeer would have to do. Behind her, the peacemakers delivered death to the foe, too, though not as efficiently as she. Death aided them, inasmuch as by killing the Kray, those particular Kray didn't attack the humans. Beyond that, she found it difficult to intervene when a Kray snipped off a screaming human's arm, leg, or head with massive pincers, or zipped a convulsing Kephlem into a cocoon of reality-wiping webs. When it comes to dying, death had no favorites. She reaped the souls of her dying allies without sadness or rancor. It was their time, and they would find their fate handed out by the dictates of an Umber judge. Death frowned as she slew, and her aura of dissolution flickered. Ellendine's consciousness pointed out that if they were not victors here today, the Court of Sleep would also be wiped away. If Ardeen was destroyed, Lotan would be loosed. A horse-sized Kray lunged forward, trying to disembowel her with a slashing pincer across her stomach. Death skipped back so the tip only grazed her, then charged back when it wheeled past, but the thing was quick, quicker than she expected. It almost got the pincer back in front of itself as a defense before she stepped in and cut off the entire limb with a stroke of Renswandeer. The small Kray scurriers were easier to kill, but the larger versions that had finally reached them required more effort. This one had 5 more snapping chitinous claws, each as large as a wagon. The first protector, splattered in Kray ichor and strands of Kray webbings, sidled up to the queen. "Your Majesty, are you all right?" Navarre said. "Shadow took you, and I..." "Navarre," Ellen Dean said, breaking from the spell of the incarnation for a moment. "Help that squadron. Believe me, I no longer need a protector. Not when death walks with me." Navarre's ears flattened, but the first protector nodded and did as she was bid. Navarre was ever the faithful servant. A new wave of Kray rushed their line. She saw War step forward to blunt their advance. He did so by flooding the enemy nearest to him with his duplicates, each of which hacked and hewed until the Kray went down. Ellen Dean realized that, as death, she could do something similar. She just had to let go completely. So far, she'd refused the incarnation complete control. Ellen Dean was a queen, and the last time she'd given up her power to someone else, she'd regretted it. It might have cost her the kingdom of Hazurium. Of course, Hazurium was lost anyway. Scheming regent or no scheming regent, if they couldn't pull a victory from what was apparently a disaster... She wasn't a pessimist, but she didn't like their chances. If there was ever a time to sacrifice everything to achieve a goal, this was it. She hoped that when it was all over, perhaps death would repay the favor and allow Ellen Dean to retrieve her sister. But no, hope wasn't what death required to reap. Hope was death's antithesis. The end of all things brought all things low without fail, smashing through emotion. Hoping to avoid death was like promising to throw the moon. Empty words. And yet mortals hoped, and in doing so, somehow, against all logic, kept death at bay for months or even years longer before she finally, inevitably arrived. Wishing didn't make things so. The only certainty was dying. Ellen Dean thought of her sister Flora, and her fierce hope to rescue her from death. It was a vain hope, a foolish hope, and moreover, a barrier that prevented Ellen Dean from giving up her autonomy to death. All things died, even her sister, and her hope that anything could ever be different. The Queen released control to death without reservation. Then the Queen was no more, not even a voice. The incarnation of death fully manifested for the first time since before the betrayal, since before she'd melded with the mind of a living human named Melissa. The incarnation had never really forgiven the Maker for forcing her, a manifestation of one of the seven rules, to make way for another. She assumed War had felt that sting even worse, which led to betrayal. Not that it mattered now. Death was returned, and she vowed never to leave again. Though Ellen Dean's idea regarding bolstering her strength remained, death concurred. With a wave of her implement, she pulled the souls of all the dead humans who'd perished in the defense, a sum of some 50 spirits so far, and growing with each minute that passed. It irked Death that when War soldiers died, they left behind no soul for her to claim. Their essence flowed back into him. The Kray souls, too, proved resistant to command. She didn't doubt, with study and concentration, she could bend those alien consciousnesses to her will. But time waited for no one, not even Death. She would have to confine herself to human and Keflin spirits. It would suffice. Death assembled 5 small squadrons of the dead, misty, white, and ethereal, but so freshly deceased they didn't realize they no longer walked as living creatures. Their memories of weapons and armor were reflected in their appearance and their abilities. They existed to do her will. Another large Kray broke through the line of peacemaker defenders, sending humans and Keflim flying. Reflexively, she sent one of her freshly formed deathless squadrons to take it down. The ghosts swarmed over the stranger like ants. She grinned as the large Kray shriveled under their life-draining blows. Her only regret was that it would take more time than remained to Ardeen to slay every invading Kray. Actually, the term regret was strong for what she felt. She was a philosophical incarnation, and knew when the inevitable was upon her. Even Death must finally die. Chapter 35 Acclamation. Jason Cole. The enemy charged across the glass with no regard for their lives. They raced into the embrace of blades, hammers, swords, and arrows of War in his multitude. His army was equally fearless. When Kray and his army clashed, neither flinched, even as blood and ichor sprayed, heads and limbs were relinquished, and bodies were ground beneath booted and pincered feet. The ability to overcome fear was a crucial quality in a soldier. His warriors, those he generated now as easily as speaking words, had no sense of self-preservation. Each one fought like a demon, which was why the army he fielded today was so far superior to the said homunculi his host had been reduced to using over the previous 2 centuries. The homunculi shared all the frailties and misgivings of the mortal from which they'd been copied, Jason Cole. War was disgusted at what he'd been forced to endure, subsumed by a being of flesh, a weak-minded, grasping, bumbling fool. It was humiliating to remember. Why War had not risen up sooner and submerged Jason, he couldn't imagine. Something to do with the will of the Maker, perhaps, he sneered, even as he smashed flat a Kray that had tried to bite off his ankle. The only brave thing Jason Cole had ever done was to slay the foe Maker and force the alien pretender from the land of the curse. Of course, War had a hand in moving Jason to that decision. Without war's subtle manipulation, they might all still be leased to the pretender. Sometimes rule by the sword was the only option. The epic conflict kept his irritation at bay. Despite the magnificent glory of it all, it irked War that